Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. For just over 6 years, I've been hosting this program to carry on the work of a visionary, Chuck Finney. Chuck was a San Mateo County District Attorney who, in the words of his daughter, Alexandra, was an outstanding advocate, educator, legal scholar, and gentleman that desired justice for all those who were wronged in some fashion. All that was in addition to the work he did on this broadcast for something in excess of 35 years. In his legal career, Chuck spent his days in the Consumer Protection and Environmental Protection Unit of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, we depart just a bit from the usual nuts and bolts of our legal discussions or the day-to-day current events that we often follow. Instead, we're talking about Consumer Protection and Environmental Unit of the District Attorney's Office. And while my guests are from San Mateo County, there are similar operations in the offices of the District Attorney throughout the region. That said, just what do these folks do? When does a financial dispute such as unfair competition actually involve a violation of public laws enforceable by the district attorney? When does it fall upon the folks in the Consumer Protection Unit, as opposed to perhaps a police agency or even a civil claim? Perhaps less known is the role of the district attorney in enforcing California's environmental protection laws. These may include laws relating to the handling, storage, and disposal of hazardous waste, underground tanks used to store hazardous materials, and air and water pollution. Tonight, instead of talking crime and punishment, or civil rights, or general criminal law, we offer a special look at these specialized prosecutions by the District Attorney's Office. There's much to discuss. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic, and that is environmental protection, consumer protection. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. And understand that our attorney guests can never provide you precise legal advice without all the facts relating to a case. Tonight, my guests may be further limited in that they work for the prosecution and thus may not be able to discuss certain aspects of their current or ongoing cases. But after all, they're here to help. A phone number again is 415-841-4134. If you're outside the San Francisco Bay Area, 866-798-8255. Joining us tonight, Joel McComb is a deputy district attorney assigned to the Consumer Protection Unit of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. The Consumer Unit enforces consumer protection statutes, including laws against false advertising, unfair competition, and other forms of consumer fraud. The Consumer Unit brings both criminal and civil enforcement actions on behalf of the people of the state of California in order to stop these unlawful business practices. Also joining us tonight, Crystal Chow. Ms. Chow is also a deputy district attorney, but in the San Mateo County District Attorney's the Environmental Protection Unit, with a primary focus on environmental cases, working with federal, state, and local regulatory agency to investigate cases including the enforcement of laws regulating the handling, storage, and disposal of hazardous waste, underground tanks used in hazardous storage, you've heard this already, air and water pollution. Her assignment includes the prosecution of cases both criminally and civilly on behalf of the people of the state of California. Without further ado, Joel Crystal, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
You know, I'd like to start with a couple of big questions. You know, when we think of such things as toxic dumping or water pollution, most people envision bringing in the California Attorney General's office or maybe the United States Department of Justice. Is there a role for a county prosecutor's office here?
That's a great question, Jeff. And yes, there definitely is. You know, environmental prosecution and enforcement of our environmental laws actually crosses over concurrent jurisdictions. So you could have environmental violations that are occurring that violate state law, that violate federal law. And even though many times we think of water pollution as maybe a big oil tanker out on the ocean that has an oil spill, but we enforce environmental laws that can occur somewhere, let's say in a creek in our county, where a business might have had a spill of material. We had a case a while back involving asphalt emulsion. There was a turnover over on Alpine Creek Road, and asphalt emulsion made its way down to a creek. And that constitutes water pollution and is the type of case that we would prosecute in our unit.
And that business could be anything. It could be dumping asphalt. It could be a dry cleaner who has a leak, or even a gas station who's got who's going out of their way to ignore leaky tanks.
Correct. And we do have different regulators within our county through County Environmental Health. There are programs that regulate and inspect underground storage tanks at gas stations. And we also have a groundwater protection program through Environmental Health that monitors different leaks that have occurred over the years and monitor the cleanup of those particular sites where leaks have occurred.
Does the environmental unit take complaints directly from folks in the community? And if so, what does one look like?
So we do have a consumer complaint process, and I have received some environmental complaints through our consumer complaint process. We have a form online on the DA's website where a person can download the form, fill it out, and email it to our unit, and we will review it for any potential violations. But most of the time, our complaints come through either regulatory agencies like Environmental Health or through law enforcement, such as the Department of Fish and Wildlife that might send us something. A lot of times, the Department of Fish and Wildlife does rely on citizen complaints to go and investigate particular situations that end up turning into investigations of environmental violations that they then refer to us.
You know, when we think of business practices, unfair business practices in particular, we generally think of civil lawsuits, perhaps even street crimes. What's the role of the county district attorney here?
Right. So when it comes to consumer protection, there are there's a statute in California called the Unfair Competition Law. It's found in the Business and Professions Code. And it gives the district attorney, as well as the attorney general's office and certain specified city attorneys and county council's offices, authority to bring cases against businesses in civil court if the business is engaged in a violation of the law. And that's very broadly defined. The standard is basically if the business is engaging in a practice that violates the law, so a practice being more than just a one-off situation, but is engaging in a practice that violates some law, and that doesn't have to be state law. It can also involve local regulations and even in some cases federal law. Then the unfair competition law says that that act is a violation, and the district attorney's office can bring an enforcement action to address that unlawful business practice in civil court as opposed to criminal court, where the district attorney's office typically operates. And the consumer unit is tasked with handling those cases.
Which is kind of a curious thing when we think about the prosecutors, we think about district attorneys. We normally envision you working in the criminal divisions, which are often not even in the same building, certainly not in the same courtrooms. It sounds like you straddle both.
Yeah, that's correct. So our unit is staffed by deputy DAs who are familiar with bringing criminal prosecutions, and there are circumstances where a case might merit bringing criminal charges. But if you kind of think about it on a practical level, and maybe I should mention just briefly kind of the remedies that are available under the unfair competition law include civil penalties that are statutorily required to be imposed for every violation. The court can impose injunctive terms, and those are basically court orders that direct the business to generally, it involves directing the business to stop engaging in the unlawful conduct. And that court order can be put
can
in
you
place
voice over the
permanently.
Name?
And the court can craft orders that will also require the business to repair or remediate problems that have been caused. So the remedies on the civil side don't include custody, like you and incarceration, like you have on the criminal side. But if you think about it, you can't put a business in jail anyway. So sometimes the civil route is a more effective means of enforcing the law than the criminal route would be.
Let me turn it over to Raimondo. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. That's much better. Now I can hear you.
Great.
I have a question, and this might be Don Quixote type stuff tilting at windmills, but with respect to environmental protections, the state of California, in their infinite wisdom, decided to treat and recycle sewer water and use that as potable water delivered to homes in various counties throughout the state. And this is not conspiracy stuff. This is right on their website, on the state's website. But since then, I've decided, other than shower water, I have not consumed any water, because regardless of whatever treatment they're using, there is still human error in every system. And it's just not an appetizing thing to, hey, I'm really thirsty, let's go get a nice tall glass of recycled sewage water that's been treated and guaranteed by good government to be totally pure, purified. If it turns out that there's, it's causing E. coli or something down the road, what's our recourse? Is it tilting at windmills. Is it ridiculous to even assume that you might have any recourse against the state of California, the monolith that they are? Should I just forget about it? Or is there something there? Because at some point, somebody's going to get listeria or something.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask you the same question. So, and would there be a conflict if somebody like Raimondo wanted the DA's office to seek out a remedy on his behalf?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting question you ask. And I think, first and foremost, it would depend on what agency is actually regulating this particular practice that is now underway in terms of the treatment of the water to be used for potable water. And in order for the DA's office to get involved, it would have to go through kind of the regulatory process first. And there would have to be determinations by the regulatory agency that there is some sort of issue. And a lot of the regulatory agencies we deal with actually have their own independent administrative power, where they can take action administratively and never even contact us. And they can just take care of a particular issue, try to address it. And if it does get to the point where the agency believes it's something that does need further review by our office, they might then approach us. It sounds like what you're talking about might be kind of a statewide issue and not just narrowly involving San Mateo County, in which case it could be something that maybe the Attorney General's office would look at in terms of trying to determine if there's an issue and then figuring out how to address that issue. But yeah, I don't know in terms of taking on the state itself for the law. I'm not quite clear on what exactly that would look like. But that would be kind of my best guess on how that would unfold if it were to occur.
One last follow-up, just real briefly. Would it sounds like a situation, correct me if I'm wrong, please, that it would be a situation of we are investigating ourselves and ultimately we'll find that we did no harm, and I would need to, if something, you know, if I were the person that got E. coli or some other malady, that I would need to retain private counsel that would want to take on a task this large, because they're not going to, you know, it's a state regulatory agency looking into another state regulatory agency.
Well, that would be a real simple question. I mean, ultimately, if it's an agency, whether it's a local agency or a state agency doing this, would there be somewhat of a conflict for a county prosecutor representing the state of California to be going after another entity, another arm of the state of California?
And, you know, that's a great question, actually. And I should clarify that the DA's office does not represent the state of California. The state of California actually has its own attorneys that represent it, a sector of the Attorney General's office that would represent the state of California. So the DA's office actually represents what we call an entity, the people of the state of California. So we are representatives of the people, not of the state itself. So I do know that there are times when DA's offices do get involved in cases that may involve going after, for example, maybe city agencies or county agencies, and that would not be outside the realm of possibility because the DA's office is pursuing justice and also looking out for the interest of the people, not for the interest of the county. We do have a county attorney's office that represents the county and its different departments. But the DA's office has a different mission, and that's to represent the people. So in terms of a conflict, I mean, and we would have to look, of course, at the details of the particular circumstance. But there are times that the DA's office would pursue cases that could potentially involve agencies within the state or within the county.
Thank you very much for answering that. I know it's somewhat complex, but and hopefully nothing comes of it, and it's just my own paranoia. But thank you all again for entertaining me and taking the question. You have a fantastic evening.
Thank you, Raimundo, and you as well. And let's switch back to the Consumer Protection Unit. Does the Consumer Protection Unit take complaints about unlawful business practices directly from consumers?
We do, yeah. Jeff, we have a consumer complaint form on the district attorney's office website. It's the website address is www.smcgov.org/DA. And then you can follow the links there to download the consumer complaint form, and it gives instructions for how to submit that to our office. We routinely get complaints directly from consumers in the consumer protection side. We do sometimes get referrals from police departments or other agencies that engage in regulatory, that regulate a particular industry, like the Department of Insurance or the Contractors State License Board. But yes, we do get complaints directly from consumers. We encourage consumers to reach out to us. Sometimes, unfortunately, due to the limits of our jurisdiction, we are unable to assist the consumer, but we always encourage people to ask and to reach out to us. And we sometimes have cases that result directly from those consumer complaints.
What kinds of business practices generally do you work with? What kinds of things really come to the attention of the district attorney's office?
Well, it's a good question. It's very broad in terms of the potential statutes that might apply. And that's because there's a variety of different industries in California, of course, as there is everywhere. And different regulations apply to different industries. So, for example, we have statutory regulations that apply to contractors and different regulations that apply to, say, tow companies or grocery store chains. There's a whole regulatory scheme that California has, and it's different for each industry. So it's difficult to pin down, you know, what we most often deal with, but I can give you a couple of examples that might be helpful. One would be if you go to a store and you buy a product, you will see a price for the product on the shelf, and the law requires that when you go to check out that you're charged that price when you get to the cashier. If you're charged more than that, if you're overcharged, in other words, that violates California weights and measures regulations. And because it violates those regulations, it also violates California's unfair competition law. Now, if it's just a one-off situation, that might not be appropriate for the district attorney's office to get involved in, because as Crystal mentioned, we represent the people. The law doesn't allow us to represent individuals to bring cases on their behalf. But if a store engages in a pattern of overcharging customers, charging more at the cashier than what the price is listed at the shelf, that can be a business practice, an unlawful business practice that leads to a consumer protection action under the unfair competition law.
Such as they don't update their barcode, so you think you're going in on a sale day and they're charging you considerably more.
That's a good example. Yeah, that could happen. Or the prices may vary on a regular basis at a particular store, and maybe the shelf tags don't get updated, but the increased price is charged at the checkout. So it's just, there's a general right that consumers have to get charged what they're told they're going to be charged. And so that's an example of a type of case where the Consumer Protection Unit would have jurisdiction to take action if it's shown that that's a business practice. And I should note briefly too that sometimes we're talking about stores that may operate throughout California. We have a lot of large businesses in California, and we, in appropriate cases, will join with other district attorney's offices throughout the state. And we will sometimes partner with the Attorney General's office, which has statewide jurisdiction, and bring enforcement actions against businesses that may operate more broadly than just in San Mateo County. And that's important to know, because you know, if there's a problem with a chain store that people know operates throughout the state, we don't want them to think that they shouldn't file a complaint with their office. They still can. And you know, another example might be, we mentioned towing companies. There are regulations that require towing companies to comply with certain rules when they tow a car, or before they tow a car, I should say. And we, you know, if they towing company as a practice fails to comply with those regulations, that would be a situation where we might be able to get involved and address that unlawful business practice.
Even at the risk
of a whole variety of things, they are sometimes criminal cases. There are cases that we get sometimes that are more appropriately handled criminally. So an example might be where the business practice is pure fraud, or maybe the business is engaging in a scam. That might be the kind of conduct that would be more appropriately handled in criminal court.
And of course, you would take that towing company case even at the risk of your name appearing on a sign in their window for some 20 years.
Right. That was a situation that my predecessor and your predecessor, Chuck Finney, found himself in after taking an enforcement action against a towing company. However, I would say that, you know, in the vast majority of situations, when there's an enforcement action brought against a business, we're able to reach a resolution in which the business agrees to a settlement, and our settlements are always filed judgments. We as a policy will not settle cases privately. They have to be settled to a filed judgment that's signed by a judge. And most of the time we're able to reach a good resolution that addresses the business conduct, and, you know, imposes appropriate civil penalties and puts in place injunctive terms to try to dissuade the behavior from occurring again. And then in addition, in appropriate cases, the court has discretion to also order restitution. And so if we have an unfair competition law case where there are ascertainable losses by the consumers that are involved, we can ask the court to consider ordering restitution. It's unlike on the criminal side, where restitution is mandatory, where it's owed, the court has to impose it. It's discretionary in the case where it's a civil action brought in under the unfair competition law.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Let's talk a little bit about the environmental unit. You know, I go out there and I see something or hear something. Perhaps I experience something. Walk me through the process. How would I draw it to your attention to where you can look at it and see if it's a problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think a lot of the time, you know, the first probably point of contact for a lot of people is going to be your local law enforcement. Whatever city you live in, whatever jurisdiction you're in, that will generally be the first point of contact that someone will have, where they'll say, oh, it looks like somebody dumped a bunch of hazardous looking materials over in this area. And generally, you know, the police might respond, realize this is something that environmental health should deal with, or maybe that the Department of Fish and Wildlife should get involved in. But there are also anonymous tip lines that exist. One of them is for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. They have a CalTIP line, and their website gives the phone number. But if someone sees something that they think might be a violation of environmental law somewhere out, let's say, in the woods, out in our county, somewhere along the coast that might be affecting our beaches, they can always call in to CalTIP, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife will then have the nearest warden respond to the area and see what's going on. And in our county, we have the privilege of having many different landscapes. We have mountainous areas, we have coastside areas, and some of the cases we get are, in fact, coastside cases where someone will see someone who's fishing out in the water, and it looks like they're in an area where you're not supposed to be fishing, and they'll call it in, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife will respond and investigate and see if it's something that is in fact a violation. But a lot of the time it is really just through local law enforcement, who then will refer it to the appropriate regulatory agency or law enforcement agency.
And one thing that I picked up appeared to be interesting, and that is for both of your units, it appears that what happens next after you get it is there's a review to see whether it involves a violation of public laws that are generally enforceable by the district attorney. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Sure. So when we get a complaint into our unit, it gets entered into our system. And there's a preliminary determination made of if it appears to be something more along the environmental lines or the consumer lines. And then if it tends to be environmental, I'll likely be the one looking at it. If it tends to be more consumer, it'll typically go to Joel. And we will review the complaint, and many times we'll contact the complainants pretty quickly to get an idea of what the complaint is about and to try to get more information. Sometimes we'll get a complaint and we're not quite sure if we do have a violation. And so we'll reach out to consumers. On the consumer complaint form, there's an area for consumers to give us their phone number, and we generally will reach out and ask for more information if we believe there might be something that we should look into. And then we basically will go through, and if we believe that there may be a violation of law, we have a process that we go through. Sometimes we will contact the business that is being complained about directly, and we'll send them a letter with a copy of the complaint, basically telling them that we've received a complaint about their business, and we're asking them to provide their side of the transaction and explain to us what happened. And many times that will get businesses to give some sort of response. A lot of the times we have situations where complainants just haven't been getting responses from a business. And sometimes by reaching out to the business from our office, we will be able to get some sort of response and determine if there really is a violation or if it's something that doesn't rise to the level of unlawful conduct that would fall within our jurisdiction. And I can turn it over to Joel for more on how we handle these kinds of complaints.
Yeah, that's right. So we initially have the complaint, as Crystal mentioned, assigned to a deputy district attorney who does an initial review. Even in a situation where we determine that there isn't an violations of the law that are enforceable by our office, we are sometimes able to provide some direction for the consumer as to who they might be able to reach out to as an alternative to our office. There are situations where a regulatory agency might have authority to address the situation where we don't or wouldn't be appropriate for our office. So it can be helpful sometimes for us to take a look at the complaint, even if
were not able to address it directly. And that's something that we will do. And then in the event that we determine that there are or appear to be violations of the law that are enforceable, then that's when the investigative process gets initiated, and that is going to take different forms depending on the nature of the complaint and what agencies have authority to investigate, and it gets directed out accordingly.
You know, I've been posed a hypothetical from a listener who asked about who's got jurisdiction with driverless cars. Now they're going to be coming into San Mateo County. So this is something that you may be already versed in. If not, it's coming. But even though these cars can stall and block traffic, they've got one case where they dragged a pedestrian for some time, and yet there's no driver, yet they could potentially be a threat to the public at large. Is there any chance for you or some other agency to step in and protect the public?
Well, I'll take a first stab at that. I would say that your caller brings up a really important issue that will require it'll need to be looked at both the legislative level and at the level of law enforcement. We have not had, to my knowledge, in San Mateo County, a case involving a driverless car. So I can't specifically comment on, you know, how our office would handle that or what regulations would apply. And so I unfortunately can't give a very specific answer, but the same agencies that regulate automotive travel, like the Highway Patrol and the Department of Motor Vehicles, I am aware that they are looking at this issue, certainly. And, you know, again, if violations of the law are determined to have occurred, that's where our jurisdiction kicks in. We are law enforcement. We're not legislators, so we wouldn't be able to take action if the law doesn't apply. But where the law does apply and there's violations of the law, our office would then have jurisdiction. So I would love to be able to give you a better answer than that. It's definitely a very important issue and creates some legal challenges because of the fact that, as you noted, there isn't a driver. But that's essentially how we would approach it.
Yeah. And just to expand on what Joel just said, our technology tends to move a lot more quickly than our legislation does. So we do tend to run into issues at times where we do run into these novel issues that we've never seen before because the technology is more advanced than what the law really allows for in terms of what is a violation of the law. For example, what is defined as the driver of a vehicle, there's probably going to have to be legislation that addresses that so that we would be able to hold accountable those types of driverless vehicles. But at the moment, like Joel said, our legislation hasn't quite caught up to the technology such that it would fall within something that we've seen yet.
And ultimately, the courts may get ahead of the legislature in deciding whether the CPUC has exclusive jurisdiction or if there is a role for local law enforcement. We just don't know the answer yet.
Right, and sometimes the law can adapt with the changes in technology. Just to give you an example, there's regulations in California that address how a travel agency handles their clients' money and rules regarding refunds if the travel isn't provided and so forth. And these regulations were written back in the 90s when most travel or much of the travel that occurred was through travel agents that, you know, maybe had a store at the mall or somewhere in town, and you would go and you would buy a plane ticket and travel. Well, travel and how people travel and how they purchase travel has changed very fundamentally in the time since. However, the regulations are still able to apply even, you know, through online purchases because of the consumer protections that are in place are able to basically adapt with the change in the technology. So sometimes that can happen. Sometimes it requires legislative changes, though.
So,
and that's just something that has to be looked at essentially on a case by case basis.
So let's take a step back a little bit. You're working on a new case that you got in the consumer unit. Do you generally seek a criminal prosecution or some kind of injunctive relief or damages?
Yeah. So it really varies
depending on the nature of the case. So the first thing we look at is the type of violation. If we're talking about a violation of a consumer protection statute and the nature of the violation is kind of regulatory. So, for example, the overcharging that we talked about earlier, if somebody goes to the cashier and they're charged more than the posted price, those types of violations, especially where we find that there's been a business practice where a lot of that has occurred, we look at what is going to be the most effective enforcement tool or what's most appropriate depending on the nature of the violation. So in that kind of a case, if we were to proceed with a prosecution in civil court using the unfair competition law, then there are three main remedies that we would seek. The unfair competition law does have a private right of action. I should note that, so individual citizens can, if they've suffered loss, they can bring their own suit under the unfair competition law. However, the remedies are different. When a public prosecutor brings an enforcement action under the unfair competition law, there are three primary remedies. The first being civil penalties, and those are mandatory by statute, and they are determined based on the number of violations that are determined to have occurred. I won't get into the weeds too much on that, but that can be calculated in different ways depending on, you know, whether the court wants to find that a violation occurred every day or the court looks at whether, say in the case of, false or misleading advertising, the court might look at the number of people who were solicited. So there's different ways that the number of violations can be calculated. But for every violation that's found, the law requires the court to impose a civil penalty. Those civil penalties are, generally speaking, range from anywhere from a penny per violation to $2,500 per violation. And so you can imagine if you're talking about a business practice that has occurred over years and there may be many thousands of violations, the exposure for the business can be quite high in terms of civil penalties. There are factors that the court takes into consideration in deciding what the appropriate amount of a civil penalty is, and the court has a lot of discretion in that regard. So that's the first key remedy. The second would be injunctive terms, and that's just a legal term that means that the court has ordered the defendant to either stop doing something or to do something. Most of the time in our cases, when it's a public prosecutor involved, we're asking the court to put in orders that prohibit the business from continuing to violate the regulations at issue. So in the illustration we've been talking about, the court might order the business to stop overcharging and to, you know, to make sure that at the cashier, the customer is charged the same amount that is posted. And so that would be an example of an injunctive provision. Those can be permanent, or they can be terms that are imposed for a period of time. So that's the second main remedy. And then the third main remedy we touched on earlier is in a case where there is an ascertainable loss by the consumers, the court can impose restitution. The court has discretion to impose restitution. So those are the three main remedies that we're looking at when we are bringing unfair competition law cases. In a situation in which we determine that it's more appropriate to bring a criminal charge, then criminal penalties are set by statute. So you would look at the criminal statute that was violated, and that would tell you what the potential penalties are.
And let me turn it to you, Crystal. You have an environmental issue that comes up. Do you normally go after civil damages or some sort of relief, or perhaps a criminal prosecution?
Yeah, so just for clarification, our office, when we bring our civil enforcement actions, since they are civil enforcement actions, we can't seek damages like you would be able to do in a traditional civil suit that's brought by an individual. Since we are operating on behalf of the people, we can't seek damages, but we can seek civil penalties that Joel talked about. And many times, like Joel mentioned earlier, when we're dealing with a business, one of the big things that we're looking at is trying to make sure that we are curbing the behavior, that we're stopping the behavior from happening and bringing that business into compliance. Whatever the environmental violation is that they've committed, we don't want them to commit it again. And many times taking the civil avenue is the most effective in making sure that that business does not commit that environmental violation again, because we are able to get a permanent injunction. Whereas with criminal cases, even if we're putting the business on probation, that term of probation is going to be limited by statute to a certain period of time. Many times it's going to be a 1 year period of probation. And then after that, we don't have any authority over that business if they commit violations again. Under the Business and Professions Code, we actually do have a section that provides for increased penalties if a business violates an injunction that's in place. And so that's one of the deterrents that we have when we place a business under these injunctions and they enter into a stipulated agreement. We have that hanging over their heads that if they do violate the terms of the injunction, they're looking at increased penalties and potentially an additional case to be brought against them. So many times we do proceed civilly for that reason. But there are times, especially when we're talking about, let's say, disposal of hazardous waste, things of that nature that are particularly egregious, particularly dangerous to the health and safety of the community, those might be situations in which the conduct is so bad or the potential harm is so grave that we would seek criminal prosecution rather than taking the civil route.
And to that end, Crystal, are the most of the people that you deal with represented by attorneys? And if you're charging a violation of an environmental law, are people entitled to representation, maybe even appointed an attorney?
That's a great question. So depending on whether or not we proceed civilly or criminally, there's a different answer to that. If we proceed criminally, as it is a criminal prosecution, a defendant would be entitled to have counsel appointed if they're unable to afford their own attorney, just like any criminal defendant. On the civil side, there is not that same guarantee of representation. And so people generally will hire an attorney to represent them in our civil enforcement cases. But we do have situations where people will come in and represent themselves. They'll go forward pro per, and we'll deal just with the person individually. A lot of the times that happens in situations where, for example, commercial fishermen are a business. Many times are commercial fishermen cases where we have individuals who have been operating their business, their fishing business, illegally. They will come in and represent themselves rather than hiring counsel. So we have run into that in the past.
Let me switch over to the consumer unit. I was going to ask you the same question, Joel, but my suspicion is it would be the same answer. You would say what she just said.
Yes, it would be the same answer. That's correct. The only thing I might add is when the defendant in a civil case that our office brings is a business, there are limitations on what a business can do in court without legal representation, without an attorney. So without getting too much into the weeds, the basic rule is that a business does not have the ability to appear pro per. And so in order to appear in court and enter into a stipulated final judgment or to go to trial, something of that nature. Again, if the defendant is a business entity as opposed to an individual, then at some point in the process, they will need to retain representation in order to make that court appearance. But otherwise, that's correct. On the civil side, it's exactly the same as what Crystal described. If we bring a criminal case, absolute right to constitutional right to representation applies. If we bring an action in civil court, then the defendant has a right to be represented by counsel, but does not have a right to have counsel appointed if they either choose not to hire counsel or are unable to.
We have just a couple minutes left. I asked this question on the environmental side, maybe a little less so on the consumer side, but someone's really taken advantage of me. I think it may be something systemic where they've taken advantage of others. Walk me through getting a review started. What do I do?
Well, the first place I would recommend going to is our website. Navigate to the consumer protection form, fill that out and send it in. Whether we're able to address the issue or not, that form will get reviewed. It's typically reviewed by a deputy DA. And then we proceed from there. As we've talked about, we are not able to represent the individual consumer as their attorney. However, if there's an unlawful business practice that is appropriate for us to prosecute, then we are going to try to get, you know, a change in behavior by the business, and in appropriate cases, we are going to seek restitution. But the caveat, of course, is that we can't represent the individual consumers, and so if it's an individual situation or individual remedies that are being sought, then we would direct the consumer to contact private counsel to talk to them about that. But the process to get it started would be to reach out directly to our office, use our consumer complaint form, and then it will go from there.
We could have a lot more to discuss, I think, but we have run out of time. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. Tonight, we've been discussing the Consumer and Environmental Protection Unit of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. And again, there are similar units in prosecution offices throughout the state. Feel free to turn to your local Consumer Protection Unit or Environmental Protection Unit in the appropriate case. Our guests tonight have been Joel McComb, a deputy district attorney assigned to the Consumer Protection Unit of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. The Consumer Unit enforces consumer protection statutes, including laws against false advertising, unfair competition, and other forms of consumer fraud. The Consumer Unit brings both criminal and civil enforcement actions in order to stop unlawful business practices. Also joining us tonight is Crystal Chow, also a deputy district attorney assigned to the Environmental Protection Unit of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, which enforces California's environmental protection laws regarding the handling of storage and disposal of hazardous waste, underground tanks, air and water pollution. Her assignments include the prosecution of cases both criminally and civilly on behalf of the state of California. Please be sure to join Your Legal Rights on April 10th, where we look at an American nightmare, a Vallejo case where, after enduring a harrowing home invasion and kidnapping, a couple is accused by the police of staging the ordeal. And we will go on to use this case to illustrate the problem of confirmation bias in the police function. As always, we'll take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Crystal Chow and Joel McComb. And a thanks to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe, have a good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.